This program was first broadcast on Canterbury's access media station, Plains FM, and was made with the assistance of New Zealand On Air.
Kia ora, and welcome to Yak Yarns, brought to you by the Canterbury District Health Board Youth Advisory Council.
Yak Yarns is an informative show that aims to educate and bring awareness to all things youth health. You can find us on our Instagram, Facebook and website.
Let us know if you have any questions
or if there's anything you want to know from our friendly health professionals.
We hope you enjoy this episode. It's time to yak about health.
So it's just the CDHB Youth Council. I'm Jasmine, the chairperson. This is Chelsea, our deputy. We're just every week chatting with some people who are in the health field about problems that youth are facing. Today we're with Alex and Akira from Family Planning. I'll just get you guys to kick us off by telling us kind of who you are and what do you / Family Planning do.
Sweet. So I'm Alex and I'm a health promoter here at Family Planning in Christchurch.
Kia ora, I'm Akira and I'm also a health promoter working with Alex at Family Planning.
Sweet, and we've got like three parts to family planning. So we've got the clinical side, and I think people are quite familiar with that. So that's our doctors and our nurses that do all things contraception, STI testing, anything sexual and reproductive health-wise. You have our health promotion and training side, which is Akira and I, and we do a lot of different things. We train teachers and our sexuality resources and health about healthy relationships. We work with clients with intellectual disability, and then we do things with other organisations like Barnardo's or at the military camp, all around healthy relationships and sexuality stuff as well. And then we also have our international programs team, and they team up with some people in the Pacific Island, and they support research and other sexual and reproductive health programs and clinics over there.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's a lot for you guys to be jumping
on. Yeah, that's why it's broken up neatly into three.
Perfect to explain to like people. One quick question that we were kind of talking about before this call, in case people didn't know, where are you guys based in Christchurch?
Well, we have clinics all throughout New Zealand. Our clinic that Alex and I work at is located at 9 Washington Way, not too far down from the skate park, but right behind McDonald's on Morehouse Ave. So it's pretty easy to find. If you can't find us there, we're probably at McDonald's.
That's a good one.
We shouldn't be, but we are.
Chaps?
I think we'll kick off, start off with what does it mean? So what is safe sex? You know, like if we were to talk about sex, what's safe sex?
Do you want to start with that, Akira?
Yep, sure. Well, safe sex is, there's a lot to kind of talk about with safe sex. Safe sex is when you're feeling healthy and you're not feeling pressured into having sex. So emotionally, being safe around sex is when you consent to having sex, you're excited about having sex, you're not feeling pressured. It's something that you and your partner or whoever you're having sex with is something that you both want to do. So definitely not feeling pressured. And then physically, safe sex is using protection. Whatever kind of protection works for you personally, whether that's condoms, the pill, IUDs, that sort of stuff.
Yeah, and I think we automatically assume that safe sex just means using a barrier form to prevent the transmission of STIs, but safe sex is way more than just like stopping yourself getting pregnant or stopping yourself getting an STI. It's very much about consent, healthy relationships, feeling safe and comfortable with your partner or partners that you're engaging in sexual activity with.
Yeah.
Awesome. One of the questions we did come through a lot was, when do you know that you're ready for sex? I know this is going to be something different for everyone, but what are some things that you could potentially be asking yourself?
A lot of people have sex for all sorts of different reasons. Mm-hmm. Some people will only have sex with a partner that they're in a relationship with. Some people will have sex with someone that they have just met, whether that's through a dating app or, you know, they've met someone on a night out. So I guess you will know when you're ready for sex in your head and in your heart. When you're not feeling pressured, when you're obviously of sound mind, so you're not under the influence of drugs or alcohol, and when both people are consenting to sex. So consent has to be the number one, the first thing that you think about when you're about to engage in any kind of sexual activity. So consent has to be given by both people, or however many people are having sexual activity at that time. And it has to be given every time. Doesn't matter if you're in a if you're married or if you're in a relationship with your boyfriend, girlfriend, or whoever. Each time, consent has to be given. And consent can be taken away at any time. So you can revoke your consent at any time. There are a lot of people that will, you know, they consent to having sex, and that's sweet. But then when they actually get to the process of having sex, they can can change their mind any time, because it may not feel right, because it feels different with every different person. And you don't have to feel pressured into having sex, even if you're in a relationship and they may have given you consent, or you may have given consent, you know, last week. Doesn't mean that they have consent every time. So it's got to be something that is given freely and enthusiastically.
Yeah. And if you're thinking about having sex for the first time with whoever you want to have sex with, it's really important to that you understand what consent is, that you understand what contraceptives are available if you choose to, and that you have spoken to an adult that you trust about it, because an adult that you trust will be able to support you to access the services you need if you want some more information, or just to give you some helpful advice around practical ways to give and receive consent, and you know, who to talk to if things go wrong. But
cool. So obviously, because we just started talking about consent there, how do you go about asking for consent? Because, you know, that can be quite daunting, especially if you're a young person, you know, like how to approach that. How do you even, how do you ask for it?
Yeah, that's such a good question. I think we often think of consent as something that's only present in a sexual relationship, but actually consent is present in all of our relationships. So that's with our friends, our co-workers, the people we go to school with, our family members, and it's all about giving and receiving permission to do stuff. So it could be having that conversation about what movie you want to go to and how you're going to get there. Consent is not just something that involves sex, but it is very important in sexual relationships. So a really good way of like asking if somebody is keen to have sex is just be like, hey, look, I'm really keen, this is what I want to do, what do you think? And then give them the space and actively listen to their answer. And then you could gauge by their tone of voice, maybe the answer that they're saying or their body language, whether you really think that they're keen or not. So somebody might say, and then you think, oh, I don't know, that didn't really sound like they were super keen. It didn't sound like they were like super enthusiastic. And it's all about just checking in and keeping that conversation going. And that's the same throughout the whole process of having sex with somebody, is you keep checking in, like, you're good? Like, are you still enjoying this? Is, you know, you still happy?
Yeah, because you can change your mind anytime. So you could have, you know, both agreed to that you're keen to have sex, you know, within half an hour before. But even during the process of having sex, you can change your mind, and the other person can change their mind, and you need to respect that, their choices as well. Because you could be doing something really fun, and then suddenly you've got some crazy thought in your head about something that happened, you know, yesterday, and suddenly that's upsetting you, and you're not quite in the zone or feeling it. You can change your mind and say, hey, look, I don't actually feel like doing this anymore. I just need to take a break. And so you need to kind of respect that decision. You can't just go, oh, you know, it'll be fine. We'll just keep going. It'll get better. Yeah, you need to respect that decision. And
Yeah, and we've got a cool acronym that was created by Planned Parenthood in America, and it's Consent is Fries, and basically every letter in Fries is something related to consent. So consent is freely given, it's reversible, so that means that you can change your mind at any time. It's an informed decision, so you know and you understand what's going to happen. It's an enthusiastic yes, so we're going back to that that sounds mean. Yeah. And then it's also specific and safe, meaning you feel safe and comfortable doing it, but you only consented to what you know is going to happen. You didn't consent to anything that follows after that. And so then it goes back to that conversation and checking in with your partner. You know, is everything all good? Like, hey, do you want to try something else?
Yeah. Awesome. Love that. It's such a good way to think about it, because, you know, like, I love like acronyms about thinking about things. Sometimes you just, you know, you can get like lost in all the information, and then just having an acronym like that is so good to just, you know, refer back to and thinking about it.
Definitely. Well, we have all these fancy words, but I think the FRIES is a really easy way of understanding that consent is more than one thing, but, you know, you're in control of it, and it's everybody's agreeing, and you're making a decision that works for you.
Yeah. So always keep fries in the mind. I mean, I'm possibly thinking about fries, so yeah.
I also really liked what you said about actively listening, Alex, and how it's like a yes just doesn't mean consent. There's a whole body language, and I guess it's the enthusiasm around it too.
Oh,
no, you go.
Like, ultimately, we all want to be good partners and good friends at the end of the day. And a part of a healthy relationship is that you can actively listen to your partner, or that you feel safe and comfortable and heard when you're trying to tell them something. So, yeah.
And consent can also... Yeah, sorry.
We're huge advocates of healthy relationships.
Consent can also be expressed... So... And just either, you know, put, you know, move your hand away or roll over. You need to kind of read their body language as well, and then ask if what you're doing is okay, whether they're still in for it and, you know, up for it. So, yeah, you need to kind of pay attention to everything, you know, their voice, the sounds that they're making, their body language, yeah.
It sounds hard, but we do that with our family members. We do that with our coworkers. Like, we can walk into work and see somebody and go, oh, are you okay? Like, you look really sad today. Yeah. So once we understand that we're able to read everybody else around us, then we can understand that we're also going to be able to read our partner's body language as well.
So basically reading, like, the room or the vibe.
Yeah, exactly.
Now that we've kind of talked about consent, and which I think is probably one of the most important parts, I think we can move on to contraception and, like, physically safe sex. I know there's a lot of different contraception options out there. We had a lot of people asking what type of contraception is the best, or what's the best for them, or which one comes out on top.
Yeah, sweet. So I actually have a whole bunch of contraceptions here next to me. So we can start off with these. They might go purple because...
Oh, that's...
But, you know, I think we all recognize this. It's, you know, everybody knows what the pill is. So we've got two forms. We've got the combined contraceptive pill, and that's got your estrogen and your progesterone. And then you've got what we would call the mini pill, or the progesterone-only pill as well. Somebody who perhaps has a family history of blood clots, or a smoker, or someone who's overweight, might the combined oral contraceptive pill might not be the best form for them, but that's a conversation that you have with your doctor or nurse when you go and see them. And there's plenty more options that are available. So I've got these. They are blue. They're normally white, but we got really good at losing them when they were white. You recognize these?
Well, you might want to hold them maybe against your hand, Alex.
Hand, yeah.
Purple. Oh, there you go. Yeah. Yeah, sweet. So they're what we call the rod or the implant, and they just go underneath your top layer of skin. There's just a cut, and these get inserted into your arm, and they last about 5 years. So that's awesome if you're thinking like long term. You don't want to have a baby for at least 5 years, or you don't want to have your period. Sometimes this can stop your period as well. These can be inserted and then taken out at any time that suits you. And then the same thing with your IUD. So I've got this one, and because it's white, it will go purple on the screen. so this is the Mirena, and then this one here in my hand, that's the copper IUD. Mm-hmm. So the copper IUD is non-hormonal, and this gets inserted into your uterus, and the copper reacts with the sperm and kills the sperm. But also if an egg is implanted, or the sperm meets the egg, then this IUD will stop the egg from sitting inside the uterine lining, and you'll just have a period. And the same with the Mirena, but that's got your progesterone in it. So that will stop, that should help you stop ovulating in the first place. So there won't be an egg, but this can be put in. You forget about it. 5 years later, you can have it removed. And we've also got a smaller version called the JDES, and that has the progesterone as well, and that lasts 3 years. And these are becoming really common and really popular because it's like a fit and forget, whereas the pill, I don't know about you guys, but if you've ever taken antibiotics, like, have you been able to take it perfectly every day? I know so something like this works really, really well for people who struggle to remember. And then we've also got barrier contraceptives. So we all familiar with condoms. We've all seen these. Rips open and then you've got the condom inside. Mm-hmm. We also have the female condom. Mm-hmm. And so this here, hope you can see it. Mm-hmm. This will just get inserted into the vagina, and then it also creates a barrier on the outside as well. Mm-hmm. And that is removed and discarded after sex. And then also this one that not many people know about, but that's called a dental dam. And Akira, why would we use a dental dam?
We use them for oral sex. So for people that want to, you can place it over the vagina or the anus, depending on what kind of oral sex you want to have. And it's really good for creating a barrier between the mouth and the genitals. And that's good if maybe someone has an outbreak of herpes or any infection around the genitals or the anus. And it's, yeah, it just helps kind of create that barrier.
Yeah, and I forgot to also mention the depot. So that's your jab or the injection, and that's every 3 months. You just pop in, they do the injection into your bum, and then you don't have to think about it for another 3 months.
Yeah.
And that's something else. You know, if you have the time and the availability and the jab works for you, that's fantastic. And that's 3 months that you don't have to think about taking a pill or any other form of contraception. So there's a lot available, but ultimately the decision as to what would be best for you would happen from a conversation with a doctor or a nurse. And so they might just ask you some questions, family history, you know, are you a smoker, and just some other like lifestyle questions to figure out what would be best for you. And then if you try something and you think, oh, like, I know that we agreed that that would be best, but it's really not working for me, there is no harm in stopping it and changing and trying something else. Mm-hmm. Yeah, because we really want everybody to figure out what works for them.
Yeah, definitely.
Before we kind of move on, I'm just asking for those who might not know, the different forms of contraception help you not get pregnant or start a family. Which ones don't help prevent STDs or STIs?
The condom and the female condom both help prevent, if used correctly, help prevent pregnancy and also help prevent STIs. Mm-hmm. The Mirena and the JDS and the copper IUD, they will only prevent pregnancy. Oh, and the depot shot.
And
the rods. they will only prevent pregnancy. They won't prevent STIs.
And the dental dam as well, if used correctly and safely, that will prevent STIs. So any form of barrier contraception, so anything that creates a barrier between you and your partner, will help lessen the risk of transmitting or contracting an STI.
Yeah, and the Mirena, the JDS and the copper IUD and the implants, the rods, they all need to be inserted by a medical professional, so a doctor or a nurse. So they can all be done at the family planning clinic or your sexual health clinic or your GP may be able to do them. Yeah.
Awesome. While we're on the topic of STIs, I know it's a big, occurrence in youth. What's there? I know a lot of people out there, they're not opposed to going to get checked, or maybe they might be a wee bit nervous or scared just because they don't know what's going to happen in the appointment. They think it might be overly invasive or painful or awkward. Can you kind of just chat to us through what an appointment might look like?
So our nurses and doctors at Family Planning, they've been doing this for years. So they've seen it all. And so don't think that the nurses or the doctors are going to be there judging you. It's a totally judge-free environment. It can be, embarrassing for you, or you can be very nervous, which is totally totally normal and expected. But having an STI check should just be a normal part of your healthcare. Like going to get your teeth checked, or going to your GP to get a general business health kind of warrant of fitness. Should just be a normal part of your sexual health. So anytime you are in between partners, or you've started a new relationship, or maybe you've just had a one-off experience, it's really important to get tested. And the biggest symptom of an STI is no symptom at all. So it's always a good idea to go get tested. Now, if you don't have any symptoms and you just want to get tested, then a lot of clinics will give you a self-swabbing or self-test. So that's where the doctor or nurse won't need to see your body parts. They won't need to see your genitals or anything like that. They'll just give you maybe a urine sample pot, or they'll give you some swabs, and you can go to the bathroom and just do them all yourselves. Mm-hmm. So there's no kind of taking off your clothes and showing the doctor your body. That's if there's no symptoms. But if there are symptoms, that's when the doctor or nurse will need to have a look at your body and just check it out a bit more thoroughly, so that they can determine what exactly is going on there.
They might also ask you questions about, they don't want a whole rundown on your sexual history, but they may just say, how many sexual partners in the last 3 months, do you have sex with females or males? And that'll help them gauge if they think that you might need a blood test. Then that checks for hepatitis, HIV and syphilis. Otherwise, if they don't think that you're at high risk, they'll just do a swab like these. They just kind of look like it's purple, but they just kind of look like a giant earbud. And that goes inside a vagina and just around to collect a sample to see if there's any bacteria there. And for males, it would be just peeing in a cup. And then this thing here, people get a bit terrified. They think it goes inside. Nothing goes inside. This just goes right over the top like this, so it's not painful. If you're a female and the doctor or nurse will do a check for you, because they might want to look for symptoms to see if anything's going on, if you have symptoms, then they might just use one of these. And I can never remember what they're called.
Speculum.
And they're not painful, but they can be quite uncomfortable. And all they do is insert that in, open it up, take a swab and have a look, and just to see that everything's all good down there. It's very similar if you're over 21 and you've had a smear before. But most of the time, if you don't have symptoms, you can self-test, which is you don't need an appointment for that. You can just turn up, you go into the bathroom, 10 seconds and you're out of there.
Cool. So you kind of like mentioned, I guess, the takeaway points where it was the key one that you said STI, like symptom-wise, can be no symptoms at all. So when do you know to get tested, especially if you're like thinking there is no symptoms at all? When do we know to like go get tested if, you know, we're slightly concerned?
Probably just between sexual partners. If you've met someone for the first time, you're starting a relationship, it's a great time to both get tested. So you can both go along together, be each other's support person, and get tested together.
Like a date.
Yeah. And if you are in a relationship and you still want an STI test just for yourself, none of our nurses or doctors are going to judge you and say, oh, you know, you're in a relationship, because, I mean, they don't care. They're there because they want to look after you and make sure that you're healthy and safe and comfortable.
Yeah.
What is something that we haven't really touched too much on, and it's completely gone from my mind now. With STIs, like you said, likely there is no symptoms, but if there were to be symptoms, which ones are the ones that you would look out for?
Those ones would be the ones that are causing you pain.
Yeah.
And discomfort. Mm-hmm. It could be internal, so you may not be able to see it.
Yeah.
Also rashes or ulcers on your genitals. What else?
Could be any painful or stinging or burning feeling when you pee. Or for a male, it might be discharge out of the penis. And for a female, it could be a change in the consistency, colour and smell of your regular discharge.
Awesome. What I was going to ask before, that's now come back into my mind. It's kind of a niggly one, and it's different in everyone's situation, but it's super important when someone's been found out they've got an STI to tell their previous sexual partners. Mm-hmm. How's a good way to go about this that's maybe less uncomfortable for people? Because I know some people would be fine to be straight up and let people know, but some people might find it a bit more difficult or feel like they don't have to.
Oh, very good question. If you are worried about contacting past partners, if you have been diagnosed with an STI, mm-hmm. you can always have a conversation with the doctor or nurse that you're seeing and just say, like, hey, what's the best way to approach this? If you really feel like you can't reach out yourself, there are nurses at the DHBs, and their job is contact tracing. And so what you do is you give them your previous partner's information, so a phone number, maybe a Facebook, if you know their address, their first and last name, and they will contact them on your behalf, but it's anonymous. So they're not going to say, hi, I'm calling because Alex has an STI. They're going to say, hey, I'm ringing because you've been identified as a previous partner of somebody who's now being diagnosed with an STI, and we just want you to come in and get checked up.
Cool. That kind of wraps up all the main questions we have. Is there anything that you'd like us to spread to the youth of Canterbury, or like what's the one thing you hope young people take away from this conversation tonight?
I guess that consent is a big yes. So it's really important, and you can apply consent to any part of your life. whether that's, you know, giving consent to someone posting an image of you on Facebook, whether you, you know, because there's so many selfies out there. And there have been a few where I don't look that flash. And I was like, yeah, no, you don't have my consent to post that. But yeah, you can apply consent to any part of your life. So consent is really important. And also that getting tested shouldn't be embarrassing. It's just a normal part of your, of being an adult, of being responsible. And that it's for your, you know, your own well-being, and that it's actually really easy, and a lot of places it's free, and it's just, it's better to be safe than sorry. Yeah,
I absolutely second both of that. I was thinking at the top of my head, my two takeaways would be consent relates to every single relationship that you have. It's not exclusive to sexual partners, and it's a lot easier than we might think it is. You know, it's not sitting down with a contract and making both of you sign it. It's very much like a conversation, listening to each other, being able to share how you think and feel about all aspects of your life, and what you're comfortable doing and what you're not comfortable doing. And, you know, second with the testing, our nurses and our doctors, they see people all day, every day around sexual health issues, and, you know, sexual and reproductive health stuff. So there's nothing that they haven't seen. It's not embarrassing for them, even though it might feel super embarrassing for you. You know, they've seen hundreds of people before you. You're not going to stick out in their mind. you know, and we all do it because we're super, super passionate about the health and well-being of all young people around us.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. Mm-hmm. And just before we go, do you guys have a Facebook page or an Instagram page you want to plug?
Yep. You can follow Family Planning on Facebook. Just search Family Planning. And we're also on Instagram, aren't we, Alex?
Yes. Yeah, I think we're Family Planning NZ on Instagram and Family Planning New Zealand on Facebook, if I remember correctly.
Awesome. And what kind of content do you put on there just for people who are thinking of having a geese?
Well, during lockdown, we were posting a lot of kind of answers to questions, like to tricky questions. So we were doing that. We keep people updated with global news and information, so whether that's around you know, laws that have been passed, or I think most recently Auntie Jacinda has approved free sanitary products for women or for girls in schools, which is super, super cool. So yeah, we just do that sort of informative stuff, and yeah
and we just try to get our name out there and just make it really obvious what we do and who we work with. So there's some information there for parents, there's some information there for young people, there's some information there for teachers or people who work out in the community, and there's all of our contact details on our Facebook page as well. So if you have any questions relating to family planning, don't hesitate to message them on Facebook. If you do message about something that's quite personal to you, they probably won't be able to answer that, but they'll be able to point you in the right direction of the contact numbers or the people in your area that will be able to help you.
Yeah, and we also have a website, familyplanning.org.nz, and you can actually book an appointment on there, an online appointment. And there's information about the stuff that Alex and I do, so around going into schools to talk about relationships and sexuality. Yeah. Mm. And you can buy stuff on there as well. So you can buy contraceptions, all sorts of stuff.
Yeah. Cool. So I think that's it for episode one of Yak Yarns. I'd just like to say on behalf of like the whole of the CDHB Youth Council for being our first guests, I guess. I really appreciated the chats that we've had, and hopefully heaps of young people will take this away.
Hey guys.
guys. My name's Chelsea. I am the Deputy Chairperson of the CDHB Youth Advisory Council.
Hi, I'm Luke. I'm just a committee member on the Canterbury District Health Board Youth Advisory Council. I've been on there for 5 years and looking forward to this.
Awesome. We have Helen joining us. So thank you for joining us.
No worries at all.
So we'll just kick off by letting you introduce who you are and what you do.
I'm Helen and I'm a dentist. I work through between a couple of practices around Christchurch.
Awesome. So tonight we kind of preemptively before tonight we asked people about questions for dental health related. So we've got a variety of them. We've put them into two sections tonight. So we first kicked off with just dentist questions. So the first question that came through, very generic, but what does a dentist do?
A dentist looks at all the structures of your mouth and the surrounding areas. These include your bones, teeth, nerves, jaws, and soft tissue. We look for and treat diseases of this area. We monitor your growth and development. We look to offer advice how best to look after your oral health. Yeah.
Awesome. And I guess following on from that, what can you expect? What can you expect when you go to a dentist? What are they going to be doing?
Oh, generally, the first appointment would be a checkup, where we look at your mouth, your teeth, your soft tissues. We look for any abnormalities, any sign of diseases or infection. We often take some x-rays to have a look at the structures that we find hard to see just by looking in your mouth. We then have a discussion with you about what we found, what we see, any advice we can offer for better looking after your teeth at home. If you need any treatment, we talk you through the options there and make a plan to move forward. Sometimes then we do a cleaning. Sometimes you'd have to come back for a cleaning on another day, but that's generally what happens in your first visit.
Cool. And I guess there's kind of two terminology that gets thrown around and sometimes like dentist and orthodontist. What's the difference between the two of them?
So a dentist is someone who you would see regularly and they check your teeth, your gums, soft tissue. An orthodontist is a specialist. So they've done an extra 3 years of training after their dental training and they look more at the straightness of your teeth, how your teeth bite together and function, the straightness of your teeth. You've probably heard of braces. They are specialists in braces. Not everyone needs to see an orthodontist, and often the dentist can refer you to see an orthodontist because we're screening for those kind of problems all the time.
What sort of advice would you give for choosing a dentist, or how do you find one? Do you just simply Google them, or what's the story?
I guess Google's a good way to place to start. Location is probably a good place to start, someone who's close to you rather than traveling for miles and miles. Another good thing to do is ask your friends and family, who do they see, who have they been to see, because often if they've found a dentist that they like, you know, you would find the same.
And I guess another question then comes along with that is, what is the cost of seeing a dentist, especially maybe if you're in high school, if you're in uni, what's the cost?
Yeah, so in New Zealand, dentistry is free up until you're the age of 18. So if you're a high school student, when you leave the primary dental care, like when you're at primary school, then they often refer you to a dentist that you'll see throughout your adolescence, throughout your high school years, and you see the dentist once a year for a checkup, cleaning, x-rays, and there's lots of dental practices around that provide that service. When you turn 18, then you become a fee-paying patient, and the cost for a checkup can vary depending on the length of time you're there and what you need, but it's probably about $100. And then sometimes your cleaning appointments on top of that. And then from that appointment, they'll talk you through pricing for that. At uni, Canterbury Uni, there's a dental clinic run by the Student Association. I'm one of the dentists there, and that is a subsidised scheme for the students. So your checkup there is $35.
Good to know.
Now, quite often we hear that we need to get regular checkups at the dentist, but now what would you say that is that monthly, yearly, how often do you think?
Well, it can vary based on your individual needs. Okay, so approximately once a year would be a standard time, but sometimes we like to see you every 6 months. And when you go for your checkup, then the dentist can advise the time frame that they think is best suited for you. There's some things we like to check in 6 months, other things we're happy to leave for a year. It's kind of like going for like a warrant of fitness of your car. Some cars have it 6 months, some cars have it every year. Just depends.
And I guess another question that kind of came through was, do we only have to go see a dentist? I mean, you've already answered it in terms of that we should be getting regular checkups, but do we only go see a dentist if we're in pain? And at what point do you know you need to see a dentist?
So no, do not see a dentist only when you're in pain. The best time is to see a dentist regularly, because we're really good at preventing diseases of the mouth, gum, soft tissue, but we need to see you to be able to do that. So if you're in pain, definitely see a dentist. That's a good time to go. But yeah. The best thing to do is to see a dentist regularly, because a lot of the things that we can prevent from progressing or needing treatment down the line, but we need to see you to be able to do that.
Now, obviously, going to a dentist is a unique experience, and it's difficult for some people. What would you recommend for people who might be scared of this new experience?
Find a dentist that you like. Talk to your friends and family. Okay, you can try a few out, but find one that you like, because it doesn't have to be a scary place. You know, we're there to help you. We want to offer advice and care and look after your oral health. Another thing you could do is bring along a friend or a support person. Every dentist would be happy for you to have somebody with you. They can come into the treatment room with you, hold your hand if you need someone to hold your hand. And I think too, some of that dentistry's had a bad rap, you know, from past years, and there's a lot of scary stories and various names that dental clinics were called. But I think that dentistry's come a long way, and there's lots of new technology and way to do things. And there's been a big shift in dentistry, rather from treating diseases, whereas now we look to prevent them. It's a long-term, better oral health.
Awesome. Cool. And so kind of the next section we had was just general dental health questions, and we had a lot come through to ask. And so I guess the first question is, how often should we be brushing our teeth?
2 times a day for 2 minutes, once in the morning, once at nighttime.
So if my teeth are bleeding while I'm brushing them, what does this mean? Is this good thing, bad thing?
See a dentist. It can be. If your gums are bleeding when you're brushing, it may mean that your brushing technique could be improved. We may suggest you need to floss. It can be a sign of early gum disease. There's a few things that it can mean. So one thing to do would be to see a dentist and find out what's causing that problem.
Good to know. What are the signs of tooth decay?
Well, tooth decay can go unnoticed for a long period of time because there's often no pain associated with the early signs of tooth decay. So it's often can only be picked up when you see a dentist. So again, another reason to see a dentist. We have special lights and glasses and x-rays that can detect all of that. But signs can include sensitivity to cold and sweet, some discoloration, or in advanced stages, pain.
Awesome. So if I have a cracked tooth, and it's not causing me any pain, am I all good just to keep going around doing things? Or at what point do you think I should see a dentist?
If you think you have a cracked tooth, see a dentist. Now, ASAP. Okay, it can mean lots of things, but the best place to get it assessed would be with the dentist, and then, monitored as needed or treated as needed, or at least then you'd know your options.
Yeah.
The earlier you see the dentist, the more options we can offer.
And well, that follows on to my next question, because what are the options if you do have a cracked tooth?
Well, it doesn't necessarily mean that your tooth needs to be taken out, but the earlier we see the problem, then the most options we can provide. We like to save teeth if we can.
Yeah, good to know.
What are your tips for dealing with tooth pain, especially to do with wisdom teeth?
See the dentist. Again, ASAP, you're in pain. See the dentist, they can fix it for you. But sometimes some warm salt water rinses, mouth rinses, a minute at a time can help. Pain relief, so you're not so sore. Paracetamol, ibuprofen can help as well. But it's good to see the dentist, because we can prescribe exactly what you need as an individual for your problem and your teeth. And also those things tend to mask the pain, rather than providing a solution to fix the pain. But the dentist can help provide a solution to fix the pain.
Well, another question we had coming through was about sensitive teeth, and someone thought that they think they have sensitive teeth. And what can they do to kind of help this, I guess, with sensitive teeth?
Yeah, so there's various toothpaste on the market that are for sensitive teeth. So that can be a good place to start. There's like a Sensodyne or a Colgate Pro Relief. But another good thing to do would be to see a dentist, because again, there's lots of reasons why your teeth feel sensitive, and there's treatments that we can provide that can help with the sensitivity or offer advice about why you have the sensitivity and ways to improve it. And yeah, often it's an easy fix.
Cool.
How important do you think flossing is? Do we really need to be doing it, even though it's slightly annoying?
Yes, flossing is very important. So your toothbrush cannot reach the points where your teeth touch. So if you never floss, then those points are never being brushed. But floss can reach them. That's what floss is for. And it's really good at reaching those areas. If you find flossing annoying, there are other options. There's such thing as an ear flosser or a water flosser, which are other alternatives to flossing. But flossing, definitely very important every day.
Another one was about mouthwash. And do we need to be using it, or is it just another option that we have?
Probably another option that you have. Again, everyone's different. Everyone's mouths are different. Everyone needs are different. So some people we would recommend a mouthwash for, other people we wouldn't. But a dentist would be a good starting point to see if it's suitable for you. And there's so many different mouthwash on the market that it's good to have some advice about which one is best for you.
What are the options for making my teeth more white? Are there many, or is it just one or two?
There are lots of options. Lots and lots of options. So there's lots of reasons why people feel their teeth are discoloured or stained, and a good place to start is to see the dentist. You can find the source of the problem or what's causing the staining. Sometimes the food and drink that you're consuming can contribute to that, but there's lots of options for whitening. We can do things in the chair, you can do things at home. Most are relatively simple and easy.
Do you have any, just to kind of do a second question on that, do you have any top tips for doing it at home? So if you're not, I mean, we're encouraging going to see the dentist, but doing it at home, do you have any like top tips right now of what we could do?
You could try whitening toothpaste.
Okay. That's good to know. Cool. And another question that kind of came through was around braces. Someone thinks that they need braces. What should they do?
So you've probably got a couple options here. One would be see the dentist, and they can assess and tell you your options for that. Another thing you can do is go and see the orthodontist and have an assessment with them. There are some orthodontists around Christchurch that offer a free first visit consultation. So you can pop in, tell them your concerns, and they'll let you know the options from there. But the dentist is a good place to start, because we screen for all of those things, and then we can offer, you know, a referral on, or say, yeah, that's valid, and yeah, get some information.
Great. Yeah. So back to sort of toothbrushing and things like that, what sort of toothbrush do we need to be using?
One with soft bristles. So at the supermarket, I don't know if you see, they're all lined up, and there's like soft, medium, firm. We want the soft ones. Okay. An electric if you can manage that one, but good brushing with a soft toothbrush is what we want.
And kind of, yeah, alongside toothbrush, you have like toothpaste in the supermarket, and there's endless range of toothpastes. How do we know which one we should be using?
A fluoridated toothpaste. Canterbury water is non-fluoridated, and fluoride in dentistry has had a long history of helping to prevent tooth decay or holes in your teeth. So definitely a fluoridated toothpaste is a good place to start. If you look at the packet, it will tell you whether it has fluoride in it or not. But again, the dentist is a good place to go to find out which toothpaste is good for you. They have varying levels of fluoride, and different toothpastes offer different things, and they have different ingredients. And again, everyone's individual needs are different, but definitely one with fluoride I would recommend as a good place to start. Colgate Cavity Protection is one that I use.
Cool.
It's often on special. Quite good.
That's good to know too.
Got to get the specials. And actually, moving on from that, what are some of your top tips that you would say are beneficial for good dental hygiene?
Brushing twice a day for 2 minutes each time. 2 minutes in the morning, 2 minutes at night, and flossing at nighttime. And the other tip would be to see a dentist regularly. If you leave it for a long period of time, you increase your risk of having more issues or problems that need to be dealt with. But if you go regularly, it doesn't seem so overwhelming. The cost is often not so great. And there's lots of things we can do to prevent, you know, problems down the line.
Cool. A question we've been kind of asking everyone as we finish our Yak Yarn series each week. What is one thing you want young people to take away from this conversation tonight?
Prevention is the best treatment. But the only way that we can prevent dental problems is if we see you. So go and see the dentist.
Thank you so much, Helen, for joining us. It's been really great having you here.
Yak Yarns, for fun conversations with health professionals about youth health. Get the podcast at plainsfm.org.nz, Apple Podcasts, and Spotify. You can get in touch with the CDHB Youth Advisory Council on the CDHB website, Facebook, Instagram, or you can email them at cdhbyouth@gmail.com.